up, guys? Welcome to In the Grip Podcast. I'm Josh Berry with AJ Cooper and Tim Schreck. Even though he's not our guest, he's going to tell us who our guest is, and I think he's a good one.
Yeah, we're excited to be back on here. We have a guy that has won 7 college golf tournaments. He has won 2 events on the Corn Ferry Tour. He was a 2-time All-American in college, a back-to-back Big Ten individual champion, and Big Ten Player of the Year as a senior. But most importantly, he was, and I don't know if this is factual, but the 2014 Hugo Boss Model of the Year. Luke Guthrie, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. That was quite the intro, especially that last little part there.
That last part true?
No, I mean, I was never at any award shows, so I can't comment. I don't know. Yeah. Was there some photo shoots? Yes.
Hey, you were repping it pretty good. I mean, you're in Golf Digest, right?
Yeah, I actually got a picture sent to me. Like, I guess somebody was at the British Open. I wasn't there that year, but like, it was in England. I was on like the side of a building, supposedly somehow like. And Hugo Boss stuff. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, why am I there? Like, they have Henrik Stenson. They have, at the time, who else? They have Ben Crane. Other options. But I was like, Liverpool. I was on the side of a building and sent a picture. But yeah, those photo shoots were interesting.
Nice. Well, they must have thought you looked the best out of all those guys you just named.
That's true. Quincy, Illinois people. We look good.
Yeah, the Midwest.
Yeah. What size Hugo Boss shirt did you wear?
It was large. I wear medium and everything else, but those things, they were small. European cut. I don't miss the pants. The pants were, you bend down to read putts and lose some air. But it was nice stuff. Like, those photo shoots were funny. Like, you had, like, probably 40 clothespins on your back and all those pictures. It's just, like, another world. Like, That was the one and only photo shoot. I don't want to try to sound like a arrogant guy here or something. Like, I'm very much Quincy, Illinois in here.
That baby.
Luke, what's that beer you got back there? We're big beer guys. What kind you got?
It's just a taster. Let's see. It's Kona. I don't even want to try to pronounce it. It's the IPA from Kona.
Is that the Hawaii brand?
Yeah. It's pretty good stuff. My favorite beer is the Kona Big Wave, but...
You got the Big Wave back there.
Yeah, I'm a Big Wave kind of guy. I'm like a one beer a night here and there. Like, I want a taster. I don't want to drink 3 Coors Lights or anything, even though that's delicious.
we got a little variety going on.
Yeah,
right
we
now.
Got a little bit going on here. So
okay.
Good.
Well, my first thing for the guest, I think, you know, a lot of people would be interested in, is how did you get started in golf?
Actually, my parents don't play golf. I had an older brother, Zach Guthrie. He's 5 years older than me. The one thing my parents did, they introduced us to every sport, kind of minus football. I don't think they wanted us playing football looking back at it. But, so my dad would take my brother to the range. He probably played 2 times a year in like an outing or two. And I just watched my brother hit golf balls. He started when I think he was 5, so that's about when I was born. And plastic clubs in the backyard at 2, and just going to the range with my dad and my brother, slapping the ball around. And I think the biggest part, I had a lot of like close friends when I was like 8 years old to 13 years old, that there's might be a group of 6 to 10 of us that just like lived at Westview, that just played golf every day. It was like the cool place for us to be, was the golf course, which I think is unique. And putting contests all day long, playing poker out there, play 18 holes, do it all over again the next day, kind of stuff. So obviously I always loved the game. Something really attracted me to it. I think I played some soccer growing up, kind of until high school, because both are fall sports. I might have played soccer if it was a spring, or if golf was spring. But just golf kind of just bit me and got the bug and just loved it. I loved how it was, you're in control of it. Like, you got no one else that you can blame. It's you, the golf ball, the golf course. It's, you can't attain perfection, but it's like a pursuit of perfection. And I don't know. There's something about my personality that loves that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all golfers here, so we don't do it quite as well as you, but we understand that, I think.
Yeah. It's like you can always get better. Like, there's always, I mean, you could literally go shoot 59, which I've never done, and like you could theoretically find a like reason it could have been 58. Like, and like what an insane, like, for, like, golfers are just not sane people. Like that way, like, yeah, so there's just always more. There's always, like, the cliche, there's always the one shot that keeps you coming back, like, that, like, you're just, wow, that was good. I want to do that again. And just, yeah, it's just addictive.
Yeah, cool. All right, so grew up playing golf there in Quincy, had a great high school career, and then you ended up at Illinois. Talk to us about how you ended up there.
Yeah, so I was just playing, I kind of told you guys the tri-state story there, just played tri-states, you know, Little People's, Country Youth in Bloomington, Decatur, all the regional tournaments, started playing some PGA Junior Series, and that's kind of when, like, more regional schools, I would say, noticed me, and winning a state championship my junior year. Illinois was really starting to talk to me then, and like some of the nearby regional schools. But Illinois state school, honestly, probably the March to the Arch team, like, that was cool. Like, watching that team, that was when I was that 05 or 04
team? 04, 05.
Like, I'm 15 or 15. Like Illinois is, like, right there in the national news. It's my home state. Like, so I'm sure that, like, it put it on the radar. And then Coach Small was watching me at the state tournament, and that meant a lot to me that they were, like, they were probably the first school in, like, that really, like, acted like they wanted me. Obviously, they're still doing their due diligence and really deciding if they do want me at that point. But I had some success on the national junior scale my between my junior and senior year, and then some bigger schools came in, like Oklahoma State and Texas. But just the fact that Illinois was in from the beginning, felt like they really wanted me, my home state, Coach Small, it was a hard, I mean, just couldn't say no. And it was a great decision. I knew some of the guys coming in, Scott Langley, Chris DeForest, me and him played on the Junior Ryder Cup, Mason Jacobs, we'd been battling it out on the PGA Junior Series here and there, so I knew we had a chance to be a good team and kind of build something there. And there's a lot of pride in that now.
Yeah, and I had a follow-up to that. You know, what impact did Coach Small, and what does he still have on you? I know he played a big role in getting there and kind of building that foundation. You were part of building that foundation of what they are now. You know, everyone knows Illinois is a powerhouse, and they're not afraid to come from either coast to Illinois now, but what impact did Coach Small have on you?
I mean, huge in my golfing career and just growing up as a person. He just demanded a lot of you, but, like, he always preached ownership. Like, ownership of your own. You should know what you need to work on. You need to know what the heck you're doing. And, like, your strengths and weaknesses, learning how to evaluate yourself and making plans of action to get better. And if you couldn't do that, he'd be happy to help you, and it probably wouldn't be as pleasant in that process. So he really, and to your point of how much is he still involved, I lean on him a lot. He's a person that I really trust what his opinion, and at the end of the day, like, what he thinks golfing wise of just whether it's teachers or whether it's just the process and what you do things, like, once in a while, if you're starting to just get a little, like, a bad attitude, honestly, it's like, just call Coach Small and just let him rip into you and just let him, like, set yourself straight a little bit. Like, no excuses. Let's go. Like, come on. Like, blue collar attitude. Let's get this. Like, I think it was more just what he demanded day in, day out. And the further I've gotten from my time at Illinois, it felt like we had no structure there, like, in a good way. Like, you had, like I said, a lot of ownership in your practices. As long as we were playing well as a team and we were practicing hard, he kind of let you do your thing. But you kind of step back, there's like this big like kind of engine of Illinois golf that you were under, and he kind of kept you in the boundaries and you took your ownership, but you're kind of bouncing between what he wanted you to do. And I mean, it's just winning golf. It's just how you get better. You see the guys that come out and they're ready to play really good on a professional scale. Like, you're just you just kind of got your head down and you're kind of like a freight train just going, you know. You're not, you got to go your blinders up and you're just playing golf.
Did it make a difference that he had some success on the PGA Tour and professional golf, you know, knowing that that's kind of your end goal leaving college?
Definitely. I mean, I felt like he has experience in about every facet of golf. Like, he's won Korn, well, it was a Nike Tour or Hogan Tour back then, but he's won Korn Ferry events. He's played PGA Tour. He's played majors. He's made cuts in majors, been low club pro. He's a college coach. Like, he's been a college player. So, I mean, about any scenario you're going to put yourself in your golfing career, he's been there. And that's huge. I remember I was going on my Oklahoma State visit. I played a tournament in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and the Southern Hills PGA, the one Tiger won, I guess in 08 or 07 was there. And Coach Small was the low club pro. I stood on 18th green with him that year. And I went out and watched him maybe nine holes after my Oklahoma State visit. And like, I was just like, yeah, I want to play for this guy. Like, I mean, look at him. He's like, he's crushing it out here. He's hitting the shot. He's hitting the proper shots. He looks the part. Like, I mean, and in school, it took me a couple years to beat him, really. Like, if you're beating Coach Small, like, means you're pretty good. So, yeah, he was a huge influence.
Was that kind of the moment you knew you could make it out on tour, or, you know, as a professional golfer, when you could actually beat your coach?
Yeah, I would say so, because, I mean, like, he's up there competing, and at that time, he was winning club pros, winning the Illinois Open. It seemed like every year, Illinois PGA every year. So it's like, dang, if I can beat him when he's, like, really trying, like, it's like, okay, like, I'm not sustainably good enough yet, but, like, I clearly have the potential to be good enough. So, like, it just makes you even more fired up and more bought in, and I think that's his like his secret weapon as a coach, is like, he's kind of got the ultimate trump card in that fact of just like, he's done it and he can still beat his guys and like kind of show them up. And it's just like, okay, like, how do you like not buy into what he's saying if he just keeps smoking you at the golf course? Like, it's kind of like, okay, I should probably listen.
Right. Yeah. That's huge. That's huge right there.
I remember a story from when I worked out at Spring Lake. It was the Pepsi Little Peoples, and Coach Small comes walking up. I'm like, wow, Coach Small's out here. Well, I realized that he was there to watch you and Langley. So I give him a ride up to 10. I'm like, I told Les, I was like, Les, I'm not going to be back for about 2 hours. And that was like worth the price of admission. I think you shot 31, 32, something like that, and Langley shot either 32 or 33. And it was like the best junior golf, college golf I've seen. I mean, that was pretty cool, seeing you two go back and forth and Small's just sitting in the cart licking his chops, knowing what his future looks like.
Yeah, those were intense moments as a junior. I remember those, like, when big time coaches like that would come watch you. I mean, you want to show out, you want to show what you can do. And I'm sure there's times when I didn't and put too much pressure on myself, but those moments that you really come through, like, you just, it, such a confidence boost on top of just like the cool factor of it. And yeah, like I said, I knew Langley coming in. He was obviously really good, and like, so it's just like, makes you want to come there even more. Even though that was another cool thing about going to Illinois, was the competitive environment that we had in practices. Like, we were a tight knit team, but like, everybody wanted to like dominate each other in practices and qualifying, and like, feelings could get hurt in like the short term, but never the long term. And it was definitely, we were pushing each other pretty hard, and made us all a lot better.
I found something out that was, sorry, good job. No, you're good. Something that was pretty interesting. You know, a lot of us from Quincy and around the area knew you played in the Junior Ryder Cup against Rory, But I just found out like a couple weeks ago that Tony Finau was on that team too with you guys.
Oh yeah.
I mean that went under the radar. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was weird. It took a while to kind of get that. I'm assuming they kind of got it figured out. But like I think we couldn't be older. The Americans couldn't be older than 15 to be on that team. But then the Europeans could be 18. So like we were like, I mean, just like little munchkins next to most of them, it felt like. But Tony was not. Like Tony, first hole we played in outside Cleveland, Ohio. And it was like a 310-yard par four downhill. And like Tony drove the green and DeForest, who pounded it too, put it like just short. And I'm just like back there, like driver wedge. I'm like, okay. I'm just like this 14-year-old, 120-pound kid, like trying to keep up and play Rory. Like, okay, cool. But no, that was like such a cool tournament. If you look back at the names, like I'm trying to think, so Tony's probably obviously the biggest name on our side, but Rory on there, but there's a guy named Marius Thorpe who's been low amateur multiple times, or one time in the British Open, and then what's her name, Carlotta Siganda. She's like a pretty good LPGA player. Mm-hmm. Bellin also was a good LPGA player a couple years ago. I haven't heard of her lately, but there's just a lot of good players and a lot of people still playing on that team. It was a cool experience.
For sure.
I was just going to say, going back to when you're, you know, a senior in high school getting ready to sign, because I'm assuming you didn't sign with Illinois until you were a senior, or did you sign with them?
It was the fall of my senior year, I think. I was a little late, like for now it's really early, but I was late for my time.
Yeah. So I'm assuming when you signed with Illinois, I mean, going through your 17-year-old head, are you going, I'm going here just for 4 years to play golf at Illinois, my dream school, or am I going here to, you know, at the end of the day, I'm trying to go pro? Is that already in your head at, you know, 17, 18 years old, or what are you thinking?
Yes and no. I think, like, it wasn't like, it was never like written on my like bedroom wall. I didn't go to sleep and see I'm going to be a PGA Tour player. I think that was always, first and foremost, I love the game. That's why I show up at the golf course, and I love to try to better myself and like get better at it. So that's like the number one reason I show up. Number two is to be a professional golfer for sure. Like that's a goal of mine. At my 17-year-old self, I think I was thinking how I could like play in college golf and be a good college golfer. I like wasn't seeing PGA Tour golf. Like you kind of asked that earlier. I would say, I'm trying to think, maybe my junior year when I came out, I played really well in my fall, my junior year in college, and was like, okay, like I have the potential to, I like knew I was like the potential to be a professional golfer at that moment, I would say. So then it was like trying to hone those skills and just do that at a more consistent basis was then the goal. I would say leading up to that, like my freshman and sophomore years were very frustrating. I felt like I wasn't playing very well, but I was close like the whole time, and just like, but clearly I wasn't good enough. And it was a frustrating time, but a very motivating time.
Cool. All right. Well, I want to get into your pro career a little bit. So you left Illinois in 2012. That's correct, right?
Yeah, 2012, June. Well,
so you leave there, and I think you start out, you got a sponsor's exemption down at Memphis. Was that your first pro tournament?
That was first pro tournament.
All right. So what kind of expectations did you go into that tournament with?
I'd say the goal, like, showing up there, I mean, it was a bit of a whirlwind. Like we played nationals at Riviera, and then like your college career just ended, and we were flying home as a team. And I feel like it was like a day or two later, I got a call, and it was like Saturday before tournament week. And like, I was in the tournament, and I'm just like, oh man. Okay. So just hopped in the car on Sunday night and my 2002 Toyota Camry and went cruising down I-57. Like, of course, let's go. And so like obviously there are goals. The main goal was like to make the cut. Like and just kind of a barometer, like, how good am I? Like, you're just trying to play to your, like, what you know you can do. Like, I felt like I was very, like, playing within myself that week. Like, wasn't trying to be anybody I wasn't, which should be a lesson to myself right now. Like, I probably had my most success in my career, or I did, early on, because I was just, like, out of Illinois, you're just so, like, focused on what you're doing. Like, and, like, you know what's makes you good, and you're just doing it, and you're just repeating it, and it's like the non-sexy stuff, but you're really good at it. You're good at the boring stuff. And that week I got off to a good start. I think I shot, I was four under, or no, I forget what I was. I was under par going into 18. It's a hard hole there, and I like hit it right in the fairway bunker close to the lip, and like I remember deciding whether I shouldn't hit this shot, but like if I made birdie, I might have the first round lead, and like I just like couldn't pass that up. And I think I tried to hit a five iron, hit the lip, and it like trickled down, make bogey, and shoot, I think even maybe or one under my first round. And like it was probably a really good tournament for me to start because it's tough scoring. Like you don't have to go shoot eight under. It might have been a little different story then. I could just go play solid golf, and I think I end up shooting maybe four under for the week and getting T19th or something like that. So, so that was a heck of an experience and insane. I remember driving home after that and just kind of like head spinning. I feel like that's when it all like hit me that I played a PGA Tour event and then like played well. And you're just like, wow, like what? Time out. What just happened? And that was a pretty cool drive home. That 7 hour drive. I remember that.
I bet. Where at that point, were you like, okay, I can do this?
Oh, yeah. Like, I would say I knew I could do it, but then, like, you go do it. Like, that's a whole nother thing. Like, to actually, like, play. I mean, it sounded like I shot 64 on the final round to, like, kind of sneak up there from barely making a cut. I was kind of, like, starting the day, like, in the top 20 and, like, I couldn't get any putts to go in, probably because I just tightened up, you know, a little bit, and speed gets a little off. But I hold a bunker shot on 16 to make eagle, and like that kind of saved my day. Like shoot one under and like really like boost me up. And but it was like a proud moment, just like hang in there on a tough golf course and just pile up good shots. But yeah, that totally. I'm trying to think what the next events were, but I mean that totally led to I got multiple starts then.
So, all right, so go to Memphis, play well. Actually, so Timmy that week, before we heard that you were getting the start, he called it, dude. He said, I bet he topped 20s at this thing. You remember that?
I believed in you.
Yeah. Yeah, and you come out T19. I was like, oh my gosh, this guy, he's pretty good at predicting things. But, all right, so you go there. You said you didn't remember what your next event was, but the John Deere came shortly after that, I'm pretty sure, right?
Okay, that was a cool one. That's probably one of my, I don't know if I had to list like my favorite best memories as a pro, but that is like number one or very high up there. That's like, that was a very cool week to have, like kind of coming off that and like that T19, everybody's pretty fired up and like, there's just a lot of people supporting me that week and to play really well. I remember Sunday that week, like TPC there, I'm sure you guys have been there. Like it kind of it's pretty hilly. So there's some natural stadium seating around that first hole. And they put some stands up and there's people there like the first 3 days. And I had people supporting me obviously. And like, it was awesome. But like I walked in and I'm just kind of doing my thing. You know, I'm looking down the fairway, I'm not looking around, and they announced my name, and like it was really loud. I was like, kind of like turned around, like kind of acknowledged, and I was like, whoa, there's a lot of people here. And it's like, I got pretty nervous there. I think I had a 3-wood, and I was wishing I had driver in my hand at that moment just for a big face, but I kind of healed it out there down the right side or something. It's just like, whew. But yeah, to play really good and come down 18, I had a lot of my college friends and family and Quincy friends.
I was there. That was rocking that day. I mean, you were like top two at that point. I mean, there's a lot of golf left, but you were like top of the leaderboard.
yeah, it was kind of like not going to be birdied 18. And it's like not for the win or to tie, but like if it just went bonkers and weird and people were like the leaders played two over in the last like five holes, like who knows, you know, like why not make a birdie? And to make that birdie was pretty cool. So that's probably one of my top moments, if not the top moment as my pro career, as my second event. But
2012.
Yeah, that got me to the top 10, gets you into another one. And so went down to another PGA Tour. Those are all great, but the biggest tournament in my career was the Columbus web.com nationwide then, but off an All-American from college, so you got to start, and I lost in a playoff, which got me like into the system. It got me status. So that's like where I could really start counting on starts, and that was huge. Like those John Deeres are great. Like if you do that maybe like 3-4 more times, like it means something. Like that, you kind of, you're out there then. But yeah, that Columbus tournament was the one that got me in the system.
Do you feel like losing that playoff helped you succeed? Because you won the next week, right?
I got third next week. I didn't win. So I lost that playoff in July, and I think my first win was September. So, but I still, like, I was around the lead for a long time in those months. I think I played 11 or 10 events that year on that tour and got 7 top 10s. So I think of those first, like, so until my first win, I think I had like 4 out of 5 tournaments were top 10. So I was putting myself there, and just would tighten up on Sunday, not just because you wanted it. And I was playing so good, and like, you got to go low on that, this tour, but shooting 6 under early in the week. And then all of a sudden it turns to 3 under on Sunday, which is a good round of golf, but you get lapped if you're up around the lead. And those were huge events to kind of learn how to just free up on a Sunday and let it rip and just keep going.
I mean, do you guys understand how hard that is, top 10 in that many events?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, actually, I was doing kind of trying to do my homework and looking up some of your stats from that year. You in 10 events, you had 7 top 10s, I think, and then I think you set the record for the most money made per tournament on the tour, at least at that time. You might have been beat by one person. So average money per event, you set the record that year.
It is crazy, like, and like it sounds stupid, but like I wasn't doing anything fancy. Like, if anything, I have more golf shots now. I have like more, like, I hit the ball farther now. I can hit any shot in the book, I feel like, now, but compared to then. But you were just like that Illinois golf, you just like, you know who you are, and you're focused, and you're on what you're doing and only what you're doing. And like, there's so much value in that. And like, you're just, you come out of that program just like, you're a tough competitor. You just want it more than most people. And like, you know how to, every day in my college career at Illinois, something was on the line. You were always uncomfortable. Like, that was just Coach Small. He makes you uncomfortable every day. Something you're playing for, something you don't want to lose, something you want to win, and you just get really comfortable being uncomfortable. I think that's the hardest challenge for me since turning pro, is to make my practices that like, to do the uncomfortable thing every day, like to put yourself something on the line that you want to do, or you don't want to be here. You have to be here until you finish this, like whatever it is. That was just my everyday in college and in practices and stuff. And that's something I need to get better at, managing myself in pro life.
Yeah, you see it at Illinois. I mean, you came out, there's the number of guys that have came out of Illinois under Coach Small. It's kind of incredible. Do you still stay in touch with quite a few of the guys that you played with there?
I do. Like, my teams I played with, most of them. Like, Barlow, Zach Barlow's coach up at Michigan now. I still obviously talk to coach. I need to get in contact with a few of them a little more. I haven't spoke to Defoe in a couple years, but he's got a couple girls now. He's doing good. Langley's been playing the tour, so I see him a lot. And there's the Brian Campbells who's out here, and Alex Burge, who's an agent now. So a lot of them are still kind of in the golf business and around. And we were all friends too, and we still are. People, everybody was in everybody's weddings, going either attending or in them. And really good memories there. So
that's awesome. All right, let's kind of get a little farther. So now you grew up in Quincy, you now live in Florida, correct?
Yep, Jacksonville.
So do you practice at TPC down there?
Yeah, so I've been here now like 7 years or something like that. It's been a quick 7.
Right on. So when you go out to practice, like, are there just, you know, World Golf Hall of Famers walking around out there? What's the deal down at TPC?
I would say when I first moved here, it was more like that. It's gotten busier and busier every year, and the people who are more moving here are the Corn Ferry guys and stuff, because you get, if you have full status on Corn Ferry, you can basically be in general a member for free anywhere at a TPC course. So minus there's a few private ones that are, it's a little different, the rules are different, but so a lot of people move to Jacksonville, young guys who don't have kind of any responsibility or anything, so like meaning family or something like that, they'll move here for the year and practice out of here. But when I first moved here, yeah, VJ's on the range hitting every day with its own bucket, and got his entourage around, and like you're kind of hanging around that, no doubt. And Furyk wasn't out there too much. He plays at other places in town, but that's VJ's place, so he's out there, and Horschel's out there, and so that was pretty cool. Like kind of like I would creep on VJ from the other side of the range a little bit, kind of like seeing what he's working on, just trying to soak everything in. Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer and knows what he's doing, and if you can learn anything from him, that's a good thing.
No, oh, yeah, I would too. I'd be right up next to him as much as I possibly could.
Yeah, it's his tempo is unreal. That's what I always just love watching about. Like, it's just really pretty to watch. So
there's a bunch of pros down there. Is there like a group of guys that you play with often, or is it you kind of do your own thing down there?
Yeah, so whenever you want a game, it's really easy to get a game. There's the first two times on the stadium course or pros times, so like you can basically go play whenever you want, which is pretty amazing. A lot of kind of pinchy moments, like playing those holes, just kind of your everyday home course. But yeah, like good friends with multiple pros now, like Justin Huber's on the Corn Ferry Tour, Chris Baker was on PGA Tour this year. We're good buddies. A buddy of mine, Mark Blakefield, lives here now. So a lot of like Corn Ferry guys. There's like David Lingmerth lives here. So during COVID, it was pretty cool. Fred Funk organized like money games, like organized to like 30 to 40 pros from maybe a 3-hour stretch would come and play a 2-day event here, just like it's kind of informal, like kind of tournaments, and you had to kind of buy in and pay your entry fee, and it was definitely worth your while if you played good. So it was pretty cool, and you got like Joaquin Neiman coming in, and like so there's always Sawgrass is and like the mecca of golf or anything, but it's a destination for everybody, pros alike.
Sawgrass is probably a top 5 recognized golf course, I would say, though. I mean, it's pretty cool. It's on probably most people's bucket list to get down there and play, so that's pretty cool that that's in your backyard.
Yeah, like there's playing like in the summer, 7 p.m. at night, nobody's around you, and that's some of my favorite time to play golf. Normally by myself is like nighttime golf. I want to play with people in the morning and play like a money game or something, but oh man, like golf at like twilight time, just you and the golf course out there and playing 16, 17, 18 with the sun going down all by yourself is pretty cool.
Yeah, so I'm just playing 17, I could hit 100 balls on that tee box, probably lose 98 of them. But.
Yeah, they never get old.
The biggest green on the golf course, hard to believe, but it is.
So, Luke, let's say you go out, you get some of your buddies, you all are going to play golf. Our guys call it units because we're talking about a money game now, and some of them think their wives might listen, so they just call it units instead of dollars. I'm assuming your all's units are a little bigger than ours here at Mosswood, where we're $5 or $10 a hole. Would I be right on that? Are you a big gambler out there or not really?
I'm not the biggest gambler. I want something on the line, because something that you don't want to lose, but like 5-10 a hole, like makes, I want to make the putt. That's enough for me. I think I'm unique in that fact. Like, whether you call me cheap or unique, I don't know, but like you play $5 a hole, I want to make it. I want to beat you. That's what I know. So, there's definitely some games, few of the guys like really like to play it. And like, if you get in that group, like you better be ready, like kind of bring your, you almost want to treat it like a tournament round. Like you want to bring it. So, there's plenty of games.
Who's the big money guys?
Oh, who's that guy? They would kind of go one-on-one. Like Adam Shank likes to, he'll let it ride. There's a lot of press that's happening in that group. And Bobby Diaz, he used to live here. Those two would go out and just because they were probably, they had the biggest stomach for it. So they would play each other and it would get like what I would call out of hand. But like for them, that's what they want. That makes their blood boil.
All right, well, so right now you currently have status on the Korn Ferry Tour. Do you have a pretty good idea what your season's going to look like coming up or schedule-wise or anything like that?
I have conditional, which I have a good conditional status. It's even confusing for us players, like trying to figure out when you're going to play, like if you don't have full guaranteed starts. But I finished like 80th at finals, which top 40, I think top 40 gets you full status technically. So my number would be like 40th conditional out of 150, 160 guys or something. So I think I'm going to get my start in Colombia, Bogota, because it's a two course event. So they get a full field, 156 man field. So I'll have a pretty good chance there. The two Bahamas courses are like 132 man fields, so I'm not going to get those. Panama has a chance, and honestly, with the COVID stuff and like that's all like kind of still up in the air of like vaccine requirements, and like it's just kind of, it's a unique situation. You normally look on past years, they call it the access summary, and like you can kind of see what was the last man in the field at the deadline, what was the last man in the field on Thursday morning. But that's kind of like somewhat out the window with kind of the unique situations now, because we didn't play the overseas events the last 2 years for obvious reasons. But so it'll be kind of interesting to see how it plays out. So just need to kind of stay ready and see when I can play, because that will be huge for me. If I can just if you play well, you can shuffle up and you can improve your numbers based on how much money you make. So when I do get my start, I need to be ready.
Yeah, so you basically have to have bags packed ready to go, because you might get might be in on your number like last second even, right?
Yeah, somewhat. Like there's sponsor exemptions too. There's normally two or three that are really open every week. So you can kind of lean on some tournament directors and see if a lot of times that's based on past relationships and stuff, and you gotta earn it too, you gotta have the pedigree. But so I don't see too many chances early on necessarily with that. Maybe Panama, little relationship there, but I can look on like our tour website or whatever you want to call it. Like I'm 144 out of 132 in the first Bahamas tournament. So I'm not going to get that because not all the guys have signed up yet. So I don't need to like count on going there. Then my first target tournament maybe is Panama, and then Bogota has a real shot, which is February.
And the Bahamas, they don't even have Mondays for those, right?
No, no Mondays, which makes it even more kind of like you're kind of door closed, probably not playing those events. And because there's the Mondays start for Panama, which signed up for those Mondays. So that will be kind of the life until daylight gets long enough, which will not really until May when we'll get full fields. May or April, and that's when I'll start getting closer to these fields unless I get one early, whether it's a Monday, a sponsor exemption, or on my own number, and hopefully play well, make a cut, and earn money to shuffle up in front of people.
Right on. Well, I saw that they have, like, on mini tours, they have this Big Money Classic down there, and I looked at the field, and it, like, it's just loaded. And I'm like... Did you ever consider going and doing that?
I haven't looked that up too much. Obviously, it's a big talk. Like, it's just right there in Orlando. So I know some of the guys that played in it. My former Illini's in it. I think I saw Dylan Myers playing it. It's like, I don't even know the stats. I just know it's like 100. Like, if 100 you win, 150,000 or 100,000, it's like kind of crazy. Or something for kind of like technically like a mini tour, just independent event like that. Heck yeah, I'll go play.
I saw that. I was like, oh man, you know, I played some mini tour stuff. I like, I'll sign. And then I looked at the names. I'm like, guys, you all have to get out of here. Mini tours are, you know, for us. Or whatever. These guys got full status on Corn Ferry Tour.
Going down and playing it. Yeah. Everybody's kind of looking to play. And especially like leading up to the beginning of the year, you'll see a lot of these G Pro events like down here in Daytona, and they'll be stacked like fields. Like everybody's trying to get some golf in.
Yeah, everybody wants their rest.
Get a part before just hit your first 3-footer slider, you know, like kind of before you like have to. It feels like you really like have to make it kind of thing. But yeah, so that, I don't know if it's from, because I'm from Illinois, but I tend to shut it down, like, in the winters, and, like, more it's time to work on the game, not, like, necessarily, like, be tournament ready right now. I'm trying to improve myself. I don't know if that's just being from up there and, like, having felt like three months a year where you're a little more in that mindset, and you don't play golf in December minus your chances when it turns 50 degrees. And stuff, but it's kind of time for Christmas and Thanksgiving and family to me right now. But I'm playing Friday and Saturday, even though I say that.
But you're a dad now, so you know that family stuff's, you know, a little more important now.
Yeah, and especially when gone quite a bit through the middle part of the year, and my family travels a lot. My wife's awesome, and she really like. Travels at least 2/3 of the time, which isn't easy with a little one, and so it makes it a lot better. I couldn't imagine if they never traveled and I just was on the road by myself and not seeing them for months at a time. That would be really hard. That would be kind of have to rethink what you're doing a little bit and see where your priorities are. But this is kind of nice to be home and just kind of work on the game.
All right, good. Well, we've kind of talked that you got some more serious questions. I was thinking we should get into
I've got some not so serious questions, but I know a lot of the boys around this area. For those who haven't heard your story, you got to give us the feels of what it was like playing with Tiger.
And talk about top five moments. That was awesome. Played with him in the Honda, I forget what year, 2014 maybe?
14 or 15, one of the two.
Yeah, so barely make the cut, 60th place, 7 a.m. tee time, and I'm playing this twosome with Tiger. And like, I've never been a morning person, and I've never been more awake in my life at 7 a.m., I can tell you that. Like, I was amped, like ready to go. And it's just it's a surreal moment. Like, obviously the crowds are, I've always enjoyed playing in front of crowds. Like, it only makes me play better, I feel like, the bigger the crowd. So playing with Tiger was just fun, like, to have all the people around. Even at 7 a.m., there's so many people. I mean, Tiger's a man. And the first tee, like, you obviously introduce yourself, like, just habit as a golfer. But, like, walking off the first tee, like, how do you – you're, like, kind of desperate to start a conversation, I feel like, in the first few holes, because you want to, like, have just, like, kind of a normal round of golf with a legend, basically, you know? Like, let's not make this awkward, but, like, how do we – how am I not just, like, the afterthought here? And he doesn't really talk to me, but because, I mean, I've written probably two or three book reports on him. I've read him the Raising the Bar book, the Tiger book that recently came out. I remember I had another Tiger Woods, like, picture book as a kid. Like, I know where he's from. I know his parents. And, like, you know everything about it. I asked about his kids off the second tee, and, like, he opened up. He just talked, and you could tell he was, like, just really, like, pumped to be a dad and just really, like, want to talk about his kids. And obviously we're both playing a tournament, and he's a tough competitor, so he's serious and stuff, but he started a few conversations here and there, like, on that front line, and just was, like, really fun the rest of the day. It, like, just felt like you're just playing with a guy. So
I mean, were you nervous on the first tee? I mean, be honest.
What'd you say?
Were you nervous on the first tee?
Oh, terrified. It was a hybrid, which was, like, almost worse. You just want to hit it. Like, when you're nervous, you just want to, like, swing hard and just let it loose. But, like, you don't want to swing hard at a hybrid. That's when it snap hooks. So, yeah, so, like, that was – I got my par out of there. I remember I had, like, a 2.5-footer for a par. And it was just, like, the little thing was really cool. He, like, missed, like, a birdie putt, and he had, like, a foot left. And my 2.5-footer was right at the crowd. So if he would have finished, like, I'm a nobody in that group. So, like, everybody runs. A sea of 300 people just right there at 7 a.m. are just running, like, right where I'm staring at. Like, and he marks his ball from, like, a foot, lets me finish, and he taps in. And, like, that was totally on purpose. Like, that was, like, so nice of him. And, like, it was just, there's little things throughout the day, and it was really interesting to see how unguarded he was playing golf. He was just talking to me, you know, just playing with another guy. And then, like, signed the cards and stuff, and, like, we're in the trailer, scoring trailer, and, like, you can almost see he's obviously has to go talk to the media, and he kind of just gets a look on him. Like, it's such a different persona that he doesn't trust the media. I don't know what it is. Like, I can't speak for him, but he was a very different person inside the ropes, like, just very more relaxed and more of just a normal guy playing golf, golf nerd that's just playing golf. So
now you've told me this story, though, but tell these people, you know, who are listening, that walking up 18 fairway, what you needed to do to play with him again.
Yeah, so we're both playing good, which is really fun. I remember we were tied going into 15, so going into that bear trap in the Honda, front right pin on 15. I don't think it was a windy day, but still, like, not a windy day at that golf course, still blowing 10, and he just stuffs the 6-iron. Like, by the way, like, the best iron player, not even close. Like, just the flight of the golf ball, it's just so pure. It was just, he hits the safest golf shots that I've seen from anyone, but he just executes them perfectly, so they look fantastic. They just land 15 feet to the strong side of the pin every time, but they're, like, starting 30 feet, and they just always curve the right way and land 15 feet left or right of it, and he goes, tries to make the putt, but he stuffs it in there and makes birdie to go one up, and I think we par the next two holes, and I got a beating or time or birdie last hole or beat him on that hole to time, which then I have a great chance to play with him on Sunday. Yes, please. So I hit it. I had warning track power for that 18th hole, and I hit it in the front bunker, but it's a long one. And it was all the way in the back back pens, long green. So I probably had a 40-yard bunker shot, like with water right behind the pen. It's
which
like,
is
whatever,
terrifying.
You're going
like a 40-yard bunker shot is terrifying.
No, thank you.
Yeah, just like not a good shot. He missed his drive in a bunker, had a layup, hit a wedge shot, kind of a crappy one to like 30 feet. So he's probably not making birdie, you know. So I birdie to play with him again, probably. And I hit this 40-yard bunker shot to like a foot. And it was just such a good, like, wasn't like a cheap one where I chunk and runned it. I mean, I nipped it. It landed back there and just chucked right next to it. I'm like, yeah. That was one of the coolest up and downs of my life. So I'll tap it in, get to play with him the next day. And that was actually the day he pulled out on 13 green. He did something funky on 3T that day. Like, he hit it pretty good. All right, great. And like, he hit a drive so far offline on the third tee box and just hit it really like hard too, like just pounded it in like in the wrong direction. It was weird, like way out of play. And like, then like all of a sudden by hole five, he's picking the ball up out of the cup really weird. And you're just like, oh dang it, this stinks. Like, you're kind of like, I want to kind of go toe to toe again with you, like in my world, you know, like, but he bowed out on 13. But the thing I admire about him, like, obviously he has a huge crowd, like thousands of people following him. And he had an 8-footer on that last hole. He's like even for the day, struggling through the day. And he read that putt and tried so hard to make this 8-footer. And he had already told the rules official he was withdrawn. I didn't know it at the time, but he had a car ready for him in that back because there's a neighborhood street right there. But like, he gave the people like kind of like what they deserved in a way. Like, it's just like what they deserve of him, and like just gave his full undivided attention effort to the last moment, even when he knew he was going to withdraw. I'm like, that was kind of a cool moment to see. But yeah, kind of a funny one was, or stupid by me, just young kid. Like, I do my own laundry. I go to laundry mats when I'm on the PGA tour. Like, me and my brother doing our laundry every week. I had one shirt left for that Sunday, and you guess what color it was. It was a red shirt. Luckily, it was navy pants, so it was a little different. So I'm wearing red on Sunday with Tiger, like I'm trying to make a statement or something. But I'm like, I played the last 14 through 18 by myself, and like, coming to 15, I mean, everybody's expecting Tiger, so the stands are packed. Like, there's, you know, 8 deep along the rope lines, you know, and it's just me out there. I'm wearing a red shirt though, so they kind of like, from a distance, they might think, they kind of think I'm Tiger from far away, like from 200, 250 yards away. And like, by the time they realize I'm walking up 15 to the green, and they start chanting Tiger Killer to me because they like didn't have the last one standing kind of thing. Like, just like I slayed the dragon or something kind of thing. But that was kind of funny. But
does that put you on SportsCenter's not top 10? Like, you killed Tiger. Not top 10. Well,
I've always told people, like, my next career is a hand model, because if Tiger ever gets hurt and they show him shaking somebody's hand, it's my hand. They always show that clip on ESPN of 13 green at that PGA National 2014. Yeah, I think sometimes they run the long clip, you'll see Zach's face because he shakes Zach's hands next, like, and they get his face, so you just get my like forearm and hand. But I'm gonna like sue ESPN for all the money rights for that.
There you go.
All right, so I've got some not so hard hitting questions for you, if you're ready.
Shoot.
Can you explain your love for nachos at Westview?
Can I explain it?
Yep. And what did you go through as a kid to have to earn them? You know?
Oh, man.
Flop shots, yeah. Over the bushes, over like, the cart barn.
So every day, like, that was my lunch, was cheese nachos. Now, like, if we're normally, there's always a money game. But it was, whether it's low man, low total, or Vegas, but if we're playing Vegas, it was for like nickels on the point. But if I had a good day and I won an extra 50 cents, it would be chili cheese nachos, because that was $2.50 and a little too much. But good days are chili cheese nachos. Normal days are cheese nachos. And normally ate those over a nice game of poker betting golf pencils. But
I mean, that was the life back as a kid. I mean, I would get, I mean, Westview was my daycare. My parents would drop me off with $5. You know, that'd be enough for a soda, nachos, and probably another soda after 36 holes.
Exactly. That's, and life was cheap back then, man. Like, just $5 a day just make you happy. Yeah, get dropped off at 8 a.m. at the tee time, get picked up at dark. Remember, they had that phone in the little hallway in Westview. You go in there and call your mom and dad. I'm ready to be picked up. Come get me.
All right. What is the best tantrum you've ever seen on the golf course, pro or high school wise?
Oh, anybody not named Paul Bell? Okay. a little shout out to Paul.
It might have been Paul Bell given that question.
He had some pretty epic ones. He claimed he blacked out multiple times when he got so mad and broke clubs and stuff. a good one in Mexico in a Korn Ferry event was, this was like the 27th hole of the tournament. And we're like, whatever, we're on the cut line. But on the Korn Ferry, like, if you're on the cut line, that kind of means you're doing something right with holes to go. You're just kind of keep going, keep making birdies. But he, like, hit a ball down the right center. We both did. He hit driver, I hit three wood. I get up there, my ball's like, there's a run out into a lake, and my ball is, like, up by, like, 5 yards, and his in the water. And he just loses his marbles, like, this cussing, like, saying how unlucky he was. And, like, he picks up his golf bag and punts it like a soccer goalie. Oh my. And, like, then, like, takes the club and starts banging the golf bag. And for one more good measure, picks it up and punts it again. I was like, whoa, wow. That's so much. Like, dang, like, you're, like, playing decent. You're, like, multiple under par. Like, how did we go here, bud? So that was a good one.
How was his finish?
He missed a cut.
Imagine that.
Yeah. All right, I have no idea what this one means, but can you explain Uncle Remus Golf Course?
Oh, man. That was Zach and I shared a bachelor party because we got married like a month apart. It was in Georgia. We played a nice course. We were going to play one nice course. That was like, you know, 60, 70 bucks. But then we were looking for one more round of golf that just cost nothing. And we were just looking up courses in the area. And the only one that was super cheap was this 9-hole track in the middle of nowhere. And we went there and the greens had more mushrooms on it than blades of grass, I would say. And we went around there and played a Ryder Cup match with about 18 guys on a 9-hole track, went around twice and had about the best time. It was, I don't know if we're the only people that played that day, but wouldn't surprise me.
All right, this next one, and again, I don't know the story behind this, but there's a group of you guys, some Quincy boys, some friends. Can you explain a couple of tee shots at what happened in Sawgrass, hole 12 and hole 18?
let's see, hole 12, I think it was maybe Paul Bell and Wade Roberts. So, like, we're sitting there, like, I think they hit first. I think maybe, I forget who was first, Wade or Paul. And, like, just, I mean, hit a foul ball, like, kind of one that you're, like, speechless on. Like, everybody just kind of, like, the guy's not bad, it's so bad. Like, it's just like, wow, that is like 100 yards offline. Like, how? Like, how'd you do it? Like, and still hit it, you know? Like, still hit it 250 yards, like, just like that far offline. And, like, the dust kind of settles on that one. And the next ball goes further right from the next player. You're like, what is happening, guys? Like, there's no trouble the other way. Like, what are we doing? Like, I had to hit next, I think, and just was like, was just visibly shook. Like, I don't even want to play golf anymore after seeing those. Like, let's just go in. But I think it was maybe the same day we get the 18, and this was Paul Bell. I still don't know how. I would love to see the slow-mo, like a BizHub slow-mo. We have video of it. Because it was 18, they wanted video. So video evidence of this tee shot that he hits. It looks like he, like, heel... I think he, like, heel shanks it, but it kind of, like, he came in with such an open face that it almost hit the bottom of the club. So it, like, does this, like, it launches a little bit, but does this immediate duck hook into the pond, like, maybe 50 to 80 yards in front. Like, and it was just like, wait, how'd you, like, hit a hook off the hosel? How'd you launch a hook off the hosel? That was just, like, remarkable. Like,
I saw the video of this. That you described it perfectly, and I don't. He made a good pass at it.
Yeah, the swing looks decent because I remember he was struggling today and getting frustrated, and like we're kind of trying to help him, and like we're talking about tempo, and like you video the swing, and you're like, "Bud, I don't know what to tell you. You just gotta like square it up a little better than you are. Like you're coming in with 20 degrees open face. Let's come in with 10 degrees open."
All right, these next two are gonna be pretty tough.
Okay.
All right. Gym City, anything off the menu? Kelly cinnamon roll.
Gym City.
I don't blame you.
That was hard. I just don't know about my answer, but I'm going to stick to it. Gym City.
I mean, I just, the cinnamon roll is nice and fresh. That's pretty tough, though.
That is tough. I don't know. I don't know if I stand by that, but we're... I think you just gotta commit and just keep going. Like that's what I said.
That a baby. All right, can you give me your best Brunerism?
Oh man, wow, so many. Like wow, I hadn't thought about Brunerisms in a long time.
Dougie that's Fresh.
Crazy. I mean, his favorite. Like so serious about it. Like about before every tournament in the morning, going to the golf course. Gonna be a dog fight today, boys. Gonna be a dog fight. He loves saying that.
And yeah, it was a pretty good team. I mean, Brunner was gifted with a lot of talent on his teams.
Yeah, we were pretty good. We were pretty good. And then, I mean, kept churning them out right behind. So, like, he did something right. Shoot. He knew all the cutoffs. Maybe that was it. He knew the Blandinsville cutoff. Oh, man, I forget him now. We had so many. Brush up on this. I need to hang out with the boys again. It's been too long.
Yeah. All right. I got two more. What is, I guess, what's your biggest goal for 2022? Kind of going, bringing it back in here a little bit.
Okay. Biggest goal would be obviously earn the PGA Tour, but right now I haven't set my goals yet formally. What I need to do a better job of this year is really setting process goals. And I've been kind of thinking about those, don't have them on paper yet. That's what I did really good at Illinois, and just get lost in the everyday and improving every day. And that's what I need to do better. But obviously, PGA Tour card, I guess really going in with conditional status, and which is brings a little more question mark, the goal would be to make the Korn Ferry Tour playoffs, which guarantees next year's status, means you had a good year. So that might mean you already got your card, and also gives you a 3-tournament stretch to get your card right there in those finals, starting from fresh, and get there and be ready, playing my best golf right there.
So with that, you know, getting ready for season, you know, what have you been working on in the off season to get ready for this year? I know you've got a couple tournaments you'll be missing, but possibly Panama or Bogota. But what have you been working on? I know it's kind of been sparingly as we've hit on, but, you know, is there anything in particular you're trying to tighten up, or, you know, is there something that you struggled with last year that you're trying to improve this year, or what is it?
Tighten up everything. It's been, obviously, like, if you look back, it's been bad. I'm not going to hide from that, and been trying my butt off, and it's been hard. It's been... you don't want to be bad at what you do, and lately I haven't been very good. So what I've been working on, I didn't touch club for maybe two to three weeks after season this year, just really like thinking about what the road forward is, like just really having conversations with my wife about like I'm I'm sick of not playing good. Like, one of the biggest things, I love golf, but I love the competitiveness of it, the being in contention. And, like, I haven't been there in so long. I'm, like, starved of it. And I want to get back there. Like, if I'm going to do pro golf, that's what I want. I want to be in the mix. I don't want to just be surviving. Really trying to analyze what there's just, like, I've been kind of complaining for a long time. Like, I just don't have a feel like I used to. Like, the feel of the swing, at the top of the swing, I don't know where the club is. Don't know where the club face is. And I used to be able to answer that. So, like, why? That was the main question after season. Like, why don't I know? Like, you could video it and it looks perfect. You could video it and it doesn't look perfect. And I don't know the difference. And I used to know that. So the main, just little nuances, I'm trying to swing with my right side more, just to be very basic. And with it, I feel like I've had little swing keys, even when I was playing really good golf on the PGA Tour, that were kind of left side dominant. And I think I'm a very right-handed dominant guy. And I think over time that has hurt me. And I've kind of lost some feeling and, like, just that knowledge of over so many golf balls and so many years of playing the game. And, like, you feel that flex in that wrist and you just know where that club is. If you got a good grip, like, it's right there. It's ready to go. It's set. Let's go. And that's what I've been really, like, I got a mirror in the garage and in the net and just grinding on that and seeing where the face is. So correcting my face, my club face.
Are you still seeking help from anybody right now? Do you have a swing coach helping with that, or are you just kind of figuring it out on your own?
I'm figuring it out on my own right now. Just me in the mirror, which was a lot of, I've seen a lot. I've been lucky. I've seen a lot of teachers, and, like, I still have a lot of the notes and stuff. And from when I have a lot of the videos from when I played my best, it got really complicated in my mind. Golf seemed very hard. And I'd say that's one good thing I did, an adjustment I did last year in the middle of the year. Although I still didn't play good or, like, have good results, the second half of the year was a lot better. I started when I made contact with the ball, I could tell you where I was going. Like, I had feel again. Like, I had, I knew what was happening. So I felt like that was the first step. Like, and then I need to clean up the club face. I need the club face to be balanced, and I need to be able to support it at the top of the golf swing and be ready to go. So when I played my best golf, my main swing thought on that John Deere on the 18th hole, on the 72nd hole, hitting a knockdown draw 6-iron into that back left pin from 179. It's crazy golfers' memories, how you know all that. But it was trying to feel like I was Hideki Matsuyama, but he wasn't around then. But that was the thought, like, just hang at the top of that swing, give it tempo from right there, and it's going to fall into place. Just don't rush it. And but in order to have that feeling, that club face needs to be balanced and supported and nice and square. So that's been the main goal.
Well, and, you know, AJ and I have been around a lot of golf. We've seen a lot of players, been to a lot of events. You know, the sound off of your club face still is way better than, you know, a lot of the people on the Horn Free Tour, we'll be honest with you. And so, you know, we're hoping the best for you. Hopefully you can get it figured out. And, you know, I'm done, and we appreciate your time. I know we went a little overboard here, but hopefully it wasn't too bad for you. So thanks for sitting in here with us and bearing with us.
Oh, this was awesome. I appreciate it, guys. So this was good fun. Let's do this again.
Yeah, definitely. And we look forward to watching your season upcoming and kind of following along and seeing how you do. And
you got a lot more fans from Monroe here, and, you know, a lot of people are going to be following along. So appreciate the time, Luke.
There we go. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. See you, Luke. Thanks,
Luke. Appreciate it, buddy.
See ya.